What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot with myself, Robbie the Wagner, and my co-host, as always, Charles William Carpenter III.
But given my ugly sweater, I actually want to be called David Beckham today. So,
All right, David.
Yeah, thank you. Just Bex for short, and then I'll work on my British accent. See where that
please,
goes.
Please don't. Our guest today is Jeff Cronstrom. What's going on, Jeff?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, not much. For the folks at home, can you give a few sentences about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so as you says, my name is Jeff Cronstrom. I've been doing DNS since the late 90s, and I run a company called Cloud Floor DNS. I'm kind of like an internet plumber of sorts, I guess. You know, simplistic way.
Yeah, I think we'll end up digging into that a little bit more about what is cloud DNS. I mean, in general, I think everybody knows what DNS is, but it just stops us from typing numbers.
Exactly. Try to remember all the numbers.
Can you imagine, like, I think of, like, you know, stickers on cars and stuff for, like, and people will have, like, links to their Instagram or their website for the plumbers or whatever else. And instead, it would just be numbers that I would forget.
Yeah, especially IPv6. In previous companies, I would remember all our IPv4 blocks, but now I just don't even bother.
Now, wait till it's 8. No, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that's a thing. Well, see here, I know why you're really here, and that is to try some whiskey. So let's talk a little about that. Today, we're going to have the Fort Hamilton Rye Whiskey. It is aged 4 years, 90 proof, distilled in New York, and it was like a big deal that it is an Eastern rye, meaning, what was it? It has no, there's something missing. There's, oh, no corn in the mash whatsoever. So an Eastern American rye style, which has no corn in the mash. I don't know. Well, at least it's their own distillate, so we'll go with that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Robbie's a big fan of rye, so every time we kind of approach one of these, he's like, he's got an extra judgmental, like, bit in his mouth. So we do the fancy Foley work too, just so you know.
So it smells like a Korean barbecue to me.
Oh, looks like you got a proper Glencairn there.
Yes, a dram. I also like to try a tumbler because you get a little different smell out of that.
I like that. We finally have a professional on the show.
Well, this is kind of funny. Previous company I used to work for had a whiskey room.
Oh,
there was
a
special button you had to push on a server that was cut. You push the power button and it would open the door.
What?
And you'd go in there and all kinds of whiskeys and other liquors. But yeah.
Are they hiring?
They're no longer around. They got acquired. But
and that got shut up and nobody's doing that anymore. Bummer though. That's like some like Webster House kind of stuff. It's pretty cool. Okay. I'm getting a little like dried figs.
I was gonna say raisin.
Okay. See, we're in the same vicinity.
Similar.
Just a little toffee, pepper.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely some peppery. A little toffee is a good one. Yeah, I would.
It's like a leather shoe full of peppercorns.
I was going to kind of say like maybe like tobacco leaf a little bit. I don't know. Definitely something else like going there. But it's interesting. It's different. I'm pleasantly surprised, I would say. Oh, the mash bill here is 90% rye and 10% malted barley. So pretty much all rye.
Yeah, it's got a weird, something weird in the aftertaste. I don't know what it is, but.
Okay, here's my arbitrary descriptor of the day. You know, when you chew something like juicy fruit or whatever for a little bit and then it loses its flavor, probably 35 seconds later, and like whatever is remaining there kind of on your tongue, it's a little like that for me.
Yeah. It's like a little unpleasant, but not exactly.
Like, yeah, like bacteria?
Yeah, maybe. Is what it was put there to fix in the first place. That's true. Yeah. I don't know. But it's interesting. It's not bad. It is a different array of flavors there. Jeff, what do you normally drink? I think we talked about this briefly when we were talking about you coming on the show.
So my favorite whiskeys are single malt scotch. And then next would be rye and then bourbons. As far as go-to for any of them, scotches, I really like the Lafroix, like a triple wood. It's got a nice briny, smoky flavor to it. You know, for the peated, smoky type of single malts. And then on the kind of the more mellow side of that, maybe like an Oban. Not really sure which one, but they're usually on the milder side.
Okay.
Rye, Piggyback is a staple.
Is that a whistle pig one?
That's a whistle pig one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then for like bourbons, you know, you get the, you know, Angels of Envy or Blanton's. Some of the sweetness I don't like as much in the bourbons. I like the, mm-hmm. Something more along the rise.
Yeah. A little kick, a little bump in that. That's the thing, at 90 proof or below, a bourbon is just going to be super mellow, maybe even almost too much, and the sweetness is there. I need like some of that burn to kind of round it out. And so the rye at least will give you a little kick around that, even at the lower proof. Yeah. Well, so we have a very highly specific and technical rating system. Just for fun, we like to give all of the things we try a bit of a rating. 0 to 8 tentacles. Tentacles because of an octopus-like character that is like the mascot of the show. So obviously 0 is horrible, 4 middle of the road, and 8 being amazing, clear the shelves. Robbie and I, since we drink so many, we tend to kind of like put them in categories. So we're just going to rate this against other ryes that we really like. But you can feel free to do it any way you choose. But it's nice to kind of like put it up against what you like. Robbie, you want to go first? Set the tone?
Sure. Yeah, you already know what I'm going to say. If you've heard previous episodes, this is not as good as Sagamore, which is my gold standard for rye. So I'm going to give this one a 4, I think.
4. Okay. Just middle of the road for you.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jeff?
So I like it. It's got some body to it. It's not an 8. I would probably give it a 5.5.
Yeah, I think that's kind of fair. Yeah, I do think it's interesting, and you know, and who knows, as it opens up and whatever else, it might start to like mellow out a little on the finish. But for, you know, a simple mash bill, I think it's very interesting. I definitely would come back to it, have some more. I can't recall offhand the price point of this. I do tend to like bear in mind price point too. Like, you know, if you are mediocre for $80, like I feel like that's kind of lower than something that punches above its weight for 40. I don't remember where this was, maybe like around $60, give or take.
Sounds right.
Yeah. And so, and I think it's different and interesting for that. It's got a decent story around it. So probably like you, I feel like I'm between a 5 and a 6. Like better than average, not amazing, but it's worth trying. I don't know. I'll just land there. 5.5 it is. 5.75.
And I did look up what, I didn't know what Fort Hamilton was, but if you look that up, there's an interesting story behind what this is kind of modeled after. You know, the old war with the HMS Asia.
Oh, interesting.
An old battleship. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
So it's got a cool story behind it. If you look the history up on what that is. And say the Hearts of Oak Militia.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if the brand is like tying that story in more like on that. I remember looking briefly on their website, but it was like hard to get details about the whiskey itself there. So, you know, then you'll look at, well, I got this from, I believe this came from DeWine Spot, which is also out of New York. And yeah, and they'll have some things there about like Mashville and whatever else, but their website was difficult to navigate. It was easy to get to. Thank you, DNS.
Perfect. So you didn't tell me this was going to be an ugly sweater party. I would have joined.
Oh, that's true. That's completely by accident too, which is really funny.
We did not plan this.
Yeah. No, we just both have, you know, bad fashion sense potentially. I don't know. I this morning went to a thing at my kid's school where they were singing, you know, they're just in pre-K and then my son is in second grade. And so, you know, they kind of sing some Christmas songs or whatever else. So I thought I would get in theme.
That's perfect. Yeah, we had an ugly sweater party a couple of weeks ago at this boat club I belong to. So I got my one ugly sweater day in
nice.
This season so far.
Well, there we go. We can talk about boats later on. Robbie loves boats, or at least pretending to love boats. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we can talk about that later. Let's not get too into that right now. But all right, we'll definitely touch on that.
Okay. So we will talk a little bit about hot takes, maybe. We'll have some hot technical takes. Some of these we kind of borrow from Twitter. Tech Twitter tends to talk about a lot of random, argue with whatever DHH says, where you shouldn't do any build steps for your front end assets, or, you know, crazy things like that. Do you want to take the first one, Robbie?
Sure. You've switched all these up on me. I don't even know what Gemini is. So I'm going to just get rid of that and say ChatGPT or Bard.
I have never used Bard. I've used ChatGPT quite a bit. It's pretty cool what it does. I've been playing around with the image generation lately, and it's really, really cool what that can do. I'm just kind of blown away, but it's weird how sometimes the words it spells are wrong. How would it get that wrong in an image? I mean, it can spell them correctly in the text, but image text is incorrect.
Yeah. The images tend to, like, I guess it's like when the text based one where it hallucinates kind of, because sometimes you'll get like an extra finger on the hand or like, like when I do, sorry, my dog's just busted in here. When I do the ones for the podcast, I'll get like, I'll tell it, be drinking whiskey and podcasting, and it'll like swap the, like there'll be a whiskey glass on the mic stand and like they'll be holding the mic or something. And like, and then there'll be like a straw into the, like it has weird things, but it is incredibly good at most things.
Mm-hmm. It's disturbing though that you can't be like, now same image, but swap those two things. And actually starts over. And you're like,
I know,
we were so close.
You're supposed to be able to do that.
I've never been able to do it successfully. And maybe that's some sort of like setting or prompt thing that.
Well, it even confirms with me. I'll be like a person's wearing a hoodie, a zip up hoodie. And I'm like, make the hoodie unzipped. And it goes, okay, here's a new one where the hoodie is unzipped and it's still zipped up. And I'm like, no, you just told me it was. But like, it totally is. So,
yeah. But you still have to be polite to it so it doesn't kill you later.
Oh, I know. I say please every time.
Right. There you go. Have manners. Gemini is Google's reboot of theirs.
Oh, because Bard did so badly?
Right, yes. I thought, well, is Bard the... Yeah, Bard was their first one. So it was like, it's kind of a reboot of theirs. And doesn't Microsoft sort of have one? Anyway, I don't use Grok either.
Everyone has one. Yeah, I was just going to ask, you don't like Elon's?
Me or Jeff?
Anybody.
I haven't tried Elon's, and I don't use Microsoft products as much as I... possibly not.
Well, there we go. Yeah. So there's something to that. Yeah. Anybody who used Windows 95 is for sure burned.
95 was pretty stable though.
Dark for life. It was 98. Things went real bad.
Right. And then was it XP after that?
Millennium or 2000? And
I don't know. ME.
Yeah. Rough times. All righty. So then here's a good one. PHP or Python?
So we have a lot of our stack in PHP. PHP is super simple. A lot of people know it. Python is also super cool, a lot faster. There's a lot more things you can do with it. There's pre-built libraries for just about everything. So I think it really depends on what you're doing with it.
Would you say, at least around 2015, would you say that Python is for little girls? So I found this old tweet that you had put up, and that's what kind of what prompted this like funny question is.
I did that. I don't even remember. But
yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I'll send you. Yeah. Python is for little girls - lol.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I do appreciate like you trying to have a real response. And I'm not sure like how much you're involved in like the modern JavaScript ecosystem or whatever else.
So
where we keep evolving it to make it more and more complex. To a lot of people have made jokes this year that with React server components, we're essentially just doing PHP. So maybe we just go back to server frameworks, you know, server rendered web frameworks.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't get involved with, you know, JavaScript, React, and, you know, all those frameworks. I listened to some other of your podcasts and what they're talking about. You guys were talking about, I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about. I know what they are, but I could not talk coherently about them.
Yeah. You know, some would say, and perhaps even me, you're probably better off where you're at, you know, like you go down this path of complexity that it's unwinding it unnecessarily. Is there's plenty of times recently I've thought about like, all right, I'm just going to boot up a Django site and build off of that. Maybe, I don't know, move on, get off my lawn.
Because you're continually learning new things, right?
When
that happens.
Yeah.
Which can slow you down, but you're supposed to do things faster because it's so much better, right?
Right, exactly. So it's ironic. And as soon as you get comfortable, there's like 15 new things. And you're like, should I try it? And then I was like, I would have been done in an afternoon if I wasn't using these four new things. Mm-hmm. I've definitely found myself in that place recently.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Over-engineering is a big problem. Like people like to just use the cool, shiny thing and like layer on tons of layers of abstraction to it. And it's like, okay, so everything is server rendered now. Is it any faster or different or better than PHP has always been? I don't think so. I think the only benefit is that it's all JavaScript. So like you don't have to context switch your syntax, which is nice, I guess, but I don't think it's a benefit enough to use an unproven server-side rendering thing when so many other things have server-side rendered for so long.
And we've trained such a large swath of a workforce in JavaScript and React, and how are we going to leverage that? I think that's part of it, honestly. Like folks who don't have true, like, maybe not even computer science fundamentals, but like an understanding to be enough of those to be able to pick up other languages a bit easier. And when what you know to build is this thing in this syntax, and that's kind of it, how do we leverage that across the board to make things? I don't know. It's the best guess that I have. Obviously, there's no like real signals of if that's what it is or not, but it feels a little that way.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, because, you know, PHP is running all server-side and a lot of the JavaScript's running client-side. So,
yeah. And now they're running it server-side, though. That's the big thing, is React server components, which is the whole, it was like isomorphic for a bit. You know, they have a bunch of different terminologies.
Okay.
But essentially allowing that on-server hydration and pushing that all up. So JSX becomes just straight HTML, and then you have loops after it hits the client. So we're, you know, I don't know, but the stat that I had read this year was that WordPress powers 64% of the internet or something worldwide. So there's still that.
I mean, do you guys run any WordPress sites, or just in things that you have built yourself with React or?
So I haven't touched WordPress in probably like 15 years.
Okay.
Thankfully for me, I have no problem with the like with PHP as a language or anything like that. But like this, I mean, it almost falls to some of the same issues around like, this is a CMS, mostly a blog engine that got like pumped up because of one click installs and then plugin ecosystem that allowed you to do more and more and more from like, you know, a website to a web application. But yeah, we've probably built a lot of things on the client heavy side, aside from like APIs and stuff. And I even think that is getting, has been messy for a while.
Yeah. I haven't used PHP in a while, but when I did use it, I didn't use WordPress with it. I would like, we sprinkled in a little bit of JavaScript. This was like, I think it was like prototype, like before jQuery was kind of the clear winner. We would use that to like do a couple little interactive things or whatever, which I think is like the right balance. Like even if you want to use React now, you can just use PHP or whatever. And then if you want to make a little piece like extra reactive, you can use React or whatever JavaScript library.
Yeah. We did that with, well, I was working, it was primarily a .NET shop, and then jQuery and MooTools was another one at the time that added that sort of like DOM interactivity.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
MooTools. I know. I've
heard of MooTools
great marketing.
For a long time.
Yeah. Moo. It's just fun to say. So somebody should bring that project back.
Reminds me of Two Cows.
Oh, yeah. Mm. That's funny. Two Cows, MooTools. Yeah, there was a real cow thing going on. You know what it was? It was the vegans. The vegans stopped it. They were like, did you ask their permission to use this in your library?
I don't know. I think that's the thing.
Oh, boy.
All right. Git Rebase or Git Merge?
We've always been Merge just because I get Merge requests. They want me to authorize them. I authorize them to Merge. But we don't have a big development team, so it's not like, you know, you've got 50 people going and working on a project. So it's fairly simple. So yeah, I don't have any philosophy around it.
Just get the code in.
Get the code in. Yep. Merge it and deploy it.
Yeah. Get it in. Get it out there. That's
yeah. Yeah. From what we have isn't super complex. I mean, we have quite a back end, a lot of different components, but it's not like quite a continual deployment process like other companies have. Recently, my company just split off from a larger public company and they had a much, much different, you know, CI/CD that we didn't get involved with. We had our own kind of group within their GitLab, which then we had to migrate out and put into our own. But
are you still using GitLab or no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got a nice like pipeline set up and kind of all in one product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We enjoy it.
Yeah. We use GitLab.
There you go. Yeah. Self-hosted or cloud? There's another.
Self.
Yeah, there you go. I was trying to come up with some terms that might apply to like network and security and administration things. I know a little bit about red team, blue team.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Red team, blue team? That's my...
I mean, it's very cool to do red team, blue team and this purple also, but...
Tell us about purple.
I don't know a lot about purple. I've heard about purple from other podcasts, like listen to Paul Security Weekly. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to try to break in, do red team. And on the offensive, I mean, I don't try to break in. We test a lot, but, you know, we're always on the offensive. So, you know, it's more blue for us. And security is first and foremost. Because when you've got servers all over the internet, especially DNS servers that are, you know, sitting out near your edge, you got to protect them. And nowadays with DNS security, you have to be pretty vigilant. I mean, we get attacks all the time. So, you know, probably 3 years ago, maybe, I deployed a product called DNS Dist. It's a DNS firewall load balancer, and you can dynamically blocks on abusive IPs. It's an incredible product by PowerDNS.
Yeah. And do you think the attacks around DNS are an artifact of like the customers you have specifically? Like, are they targeting those customers or are they just saying, oh, maybe this cloud product is, you know, let's check vulnerabilities or something?
I don't think, I mean, some of the traffic we see come in can be a vulnerability scan. Those are usually smaller, whether, you know, they're doing pen testing, things like that. But other attacks that come in when, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of queries a second, then, you know, that could be, you know, some botnet looking for a way in, looking for certain hosts or what have you. And, you know, they find hits on hosts and then they try to attack those hosts. So we're kind of like the forefront before they actually get into the person's records to see what's valid, what's not. And then they can continue their attack from there. But when we see these come in, we can automatically block them, or we can actually go and say, hey, I just want to cut the queries per second down for this domain name at this particular site down to, you know, say 10, 100, 1,000 queries a second, so that, you know, it quenches all that bad traffic.
So I don't know a lot about how botnets work, but I've listened to a few episodes of Darknet Diaries, so I'm basically an expert. But yeah, I was listening to one today where they were talking about like how they just hijack a ton of machines to make the botnet or whatever and then attack stuff. So if you block all the IPs from those machines, but then they were actual legitimate machines and like they get control back of them, how does that work? Like, can you give them access back? Or
So we have dynamic blocks that can happen. And then if we don't see any traffic that's exceeded a certain threshold for a certain amount of time, that block gets automatically dropped.
Okay.
And so when there's a botnet out there, they used to try to target the DNS service directly. Now, because of the size of Cloudflare's public DNS network, Google's Quad9, all of these public DNS servers just take these queries from the botnet. And you know, you're querying that one Anycast IP address of say 1.1.1.1, but on the back end, they've got hundreds of servers or thousands across the globe. And we see these requests coming from multiple different IP addresses on their blocks. And, you know, for some of those, we have to whitelist those because they're actually valid. So it gets a little tricky sometimes. It takes a little handholding, but we have automation around that. So if we have to put in manual blocks, we can do that easily as well, or manual interventions, we'll call it. So we, on the back end, we run SALT and we can easily deploy across our entire network very quickly.
So I think this is a good sequitur right into, okay, so what exactly is Cloudflare DNS? Because it sounds like it's managed DNS with all of these kinds of things that I would have to do myself if I wasn't utilizing your service, right?
Yeah. I mean, to try to run your own DNS server, I mean, yeah, you can do it, but we have a global footprint for anybody that's not familiar with Anycast. It's a way of publicly announcing your IP address space via BGP. So you're announcing the same IP address space from everywhere around the globe. Wherever you have a point of presence, POP, then you're announcing the same IP address. So what happens when you do that is when somebody looks up a domain name that's on the platform that we are authoritative for, it will go to the closest server to them or whatever their public DNS server is. That public DNS server will find the closest service to them just via BGP routing. So trying to do that yourself, I mean, you'd spend a ton of money. You know, typically people would run two DNS servers doing it themselves at two different places. It's going to be slow. Where, you know, I think our average in the US is 9 milliseconds, something like that. So yeah, we run a global DNS network, a unicast and anycast network. So we run a lot of domains. We have a lot of controls, geo capabilities for country and state level in the United States. We have another service called Traffic Director that announces certain IP addresses for certain host names. Given, like, say, if you hit a West Coast, we can have West Coast IP addresses returned to people's websites or APIs, or whatever. It's kind of like how a CDN would run. We do domain registrations. We do secure forwarding like HTTPS redirects, or also branding via HTTPS. So if there's a backend sort of a white label portal of some sort, and you want to put your own domain name on it, we can do that to, you know, via Let's Encrypt, we'll go automatically register the cert for you. And then somebody types in, say, www.portal.com, we'll keep that in the browser, but pull from a different origin, similar to a CDN also.
Right.
So okay. You can either have it do that, whether the proxy effect or complete redirect.
So these are all like enterprise level services though, right? Like this
correct,
isn't
yeah.
like, yeah, I have a podcast website. Mm-hmm. I probably don't need managed DNS in the same way.
It all depends on the traffic and stability and things like that. I mean, some people are very happy with their GoDaddy DNS, but if you want to do anything with it, that might not be the thing, because we also monitor websites. We do failover. So yeah. One site goes down, go to another one, and load balance the records. We're kind of like a niche DNS company. So you need certain services, and we can do that.
Yeah. You got a guy.
Got a guy. Got to have a guy. Or a girl.
Yeah, that's true. Be inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they. I don't know.
Them.
Anyone. Yeah.
Any being with these skills.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Robbie, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say, people have probably heard of Cloudflare. So like, is it similar to what Cloudflare does on like compare and contrast, I guess? Like what's the difference?
Well, Cloudflare, I mean, you can't touch Cloudflare. They're huge. They have an unbelievable WAF, the web application firewall. We have a simple WAF, which the same forwarding product, this branding product is built off of, but it doesn't have the bells and whistles that they have and the reporting. I mean, that just takes a huge undertaking to do that. It's similar. I mean, I used to know some of the guys at Cloudflare because I've just been in DNS for so long that somebody that used to work there had said, oh, we're never going to get into domains and DNS or anything like that. But now they're doing DNS and domain registration. I mean, why not?
Yeah, everybody's doing registration at this point. I feel like there's so many places where you can do registration.
Just not Google anymore.
Yeah. Sold it to what was it?
I didn't realize they sold it. I thought they just shut it down.
Well, they kind of shut it down and pushed everybody over to one of those like, you know, WYSIWYG site builder things. What was the big one? It's not Wix, but it's like...
Yeah, Wix is the only one I know of.
It was like older than that. And it's not Shopify, but it is like, I don't know. My wedding website was on that, which would have been like 2015. Anyway, here nor there, it doesn't matter. What?
The Knot?
The Knot. No, actually.
That's what wedding websites are on now.
Yeah, Wedding Wire. My wife worked for Wedding Wire way back in the day in DC. Yeah. Anyway, tangential side thing. So yeah, I think we have a grasp a little bit around managed DNS and having that as a service and where some of those benefits are and having like the right nuance that you need.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, is there a way with, I guess it wouldn't really make sense, I guess, right? Like it's called Cloudflare. It has to be other people's computers. I can't run Cloudflare on-prem, right?
No. You have a portal or API access and that's all you need.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. That kind of makes sense. I think we're like, so here are some other things. So in, we always like to talk about in the web aspect, right? Anything that makes the web, like we've spoken to recruiters and project folks and everything else. Like, okay. I don't think we've talked much about like, so you have a network engineer or a systems administrator or tech support specialist. Like, what are the differences between those roles, which are, you know, I think fundamental to making the web exist?
Well, for a larger company, they're very segregated. You've got specific roles, network engineers, system engineers, and things like that. We're not a larger company like that. So you're wearing different hats, you know. System engineers could be doing some, you know, portal updates and PHP one day, and then, you know, maybe they're working on a database the next day. And then some of the support can overlap between people with expertise in certain areas. So in our world, there's multiple roles that each plays. You know, there's not cookie cutter. All right, this is your position. This is what you do. Larger companies, which I've only worked for a couple larger ones, and
I bet not Microsoft.
Negative. Nope. No, one public company and one other one before that, which was a little bit small, only like, I don't know how many people they had, 500, 600. So, yeah. But I prefer the smaller companies. And, you know.
Oh, that's fair. And then wearing many hats, the jack of all trades. I feel like a bunch of those roles that I described too, at least in like software development for the web, have been rolled into this thing called DevOps now, or platform engineering. That's another one too that gets mentioned a bunch. Yeah. And it's sort of like same thing repackaged, remarketed or something. Mm,
just something to make it maybe sound a little bit better. DevOps, DevSecOps. And
yeah. Yes. Yes.
Is that real? I don't know.
I mean, it's real in terms of like the work people have to do, but like, does it need another definition that doesn't fit under any previously determined umbrellas? Maybe it's folks that are really smart and they're like, how do I increase the band for my salary? I know. That's possibly that.
But I mean, anybody doing development should be aware of security. In my mind, I mean, if you're developing, you got to know what's going to be able to either break your program or break into your program. You just have to have a security mindset.
Yeah. I would say that I think as a whole that there is probably less of that than there should be. And it's probably more dangerous than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you look, what was it called? Patch Tuesdays? Who does that?
I don't know. I've never even heard of this.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. See, this is why we're bridging the gap here.
So I listened to another podcast, Internet Sands, with Johannes Ulrich. And I think it's every one Tuesday a month, Microsoft has a Patch Tuesday. And they release hundreds of patches. Yeah.
Well, a scheduled release, too. That's like unheard of in the CICD world. What?
At one time.
Yeah. We're constantly throwing out patches. Yeah, right. Yeah, for like installed software in that way, though, it's like not possible to ask someone every morning to reinstall before you start your day. Yeah.
Well, that's true. I do that with VS Code because I use a nightly one.
Oh, do you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. So
restart to update every morning. Sorry to derail what you were saying there.
Well, that just sounds like not fun. I put off updates forever, so I'm probably the most insecure person, both emotionally and within like the work that I do. So there's that aspect. Yeah, I'm always like, later, restart later. I don't know. I'm doing a thing. I can't stop for your things, except for Zoom. Zoom is the worst because you start Zoom, and if you haven't had it open or whatever, and you're like, oh, I need to open it, get on a meeting, inevitable, it'll be like downloading and installing updates first.
Yep.
Anyway, this is why we drink.
You know, I'm getting orange peel now.
Ooh. Mm. Okay, so that could be where some of the bitterness comes from too, right? If you get like peel, then you get the citrus, but then you also get some of that bitterness in the skin. Yeah, I'm actually, well, I'm also drinking a water that has a citrus, light tinge of citrus flavoring, so.
I like that Syntax.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard of that podcast?
No.
We're mentioning podcast. Syntax is syntax.fm is one of the most popular tech podcasts. And they're now part of Sentry. Do you know Sentry.io? The whole observability.
Error and exception monitoring or whatever.
Is that what they say? Is that what the things?
I forget what their ad read used to be.
Error exception monitoring. Yeah. I mean, if you say it into a nice mic, it all sounds good. But anyway.
That's true.
The nice folks at Syntax gave us these things. Or at least this is what I picked. I don't think Robbie picked it.
I got shirts.
Yeah, you got shirts. I got a nice Yeti tumbler, 30-ounce tumbler. Make sure I'm hydrated and at a great price, which was zero.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, I do want to say, speaking of bitterness, what's the beef with Microsoft? Tell us about that.
So I wouldn't call it a beat. I guess I stopped using, well, I haven't been able to completely get away for certain reasons, which I can talk about if we want to. However, sure. I stopped using Windows in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I would fight with drivers on Linux, on laptops with Linux. And because I've been kind of working on Linux systems, backends, I mean, you can do whatever you want through a CLI with most things on Linux servers, and Windows consoles weren't great. They would crash, and just, I mean, for gaming, they were great, but
right.
Other than that.
Yeah. Because they're the only thing that games run on.
Yeah.
Out of it.
And once Macs changed to a BSD kernel, I switched over to a MacBook, and that's what I run now.
There you go. Yeah. This is a common story throughout tech in general. Is, you know, rage quit Windows until you want a game. And then here you go. You're just kind of forced into it because there's just no workaround that is useful. And, you know, well, you play. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, have you installed the Linux subsystem on Windows before?
Never, no.
Because that gets around it. You can use Linux right inside.
But why would
so
I
it's
want
like
to?
You don't have to use PowerShell and stuff. It's just like part
natively.
Of it now. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, they should just abandon all of their core functionality and be like, you know, Unix is the way. Let's do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unify on Unix. I mean, because, like, moving forward, everybody hates Teams. Everybody hates most of their products, except for the new stuff, mostly the ones that they bought from someone else, right? Like, we're in the ecosystem if you're on GitHub. NPM, they own that too, right? So packaging thing, VS Code. So it's a very pervasive quasi-IDE, depending on how you configure it.
Mm-hmm. Anything you can game on, PCs, Xbox.
Right, yeah, and that's kind of, that's the stopping point. All their legacy work, people are like, garbage.
Yeah, I know, because we keep around one virtual Windows machine just to compile some .NET stuff, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And .NET folks, though, do like it a lot. I mean, I guess in the same way that, like, Laravel folks really like PHP, .NET folks really are like, C# is amazing, and you can do some things with that, but, like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I might have been burned too hard to go back to some of those things ever.
I can understand that.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair, though. I think I know where we might end up going with this one, but we'll just, if you weren't in tech, what career would you choose?
That's tough. I've thought about this before because, yeah, you ponder on these things sometimes. Before I was in tech, I was a carpenter. I built,
like me,
big additions. I had one of my projects featured in Better Homes and Gardens way back in the day.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I had gotten my company online. This was like mid-90s, I think. I was putting my company's projects online with Microsoft Project when I was still using Windows.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then this magazine had picked up that I was doing this, and they did an article on me that I was, you know, using this tech and construction. I was like, that's kind of cool. So I kind of got tired of doing that. So I kind of switched my hobbies and careers around and went into tech and just kind of did carpentry as a hobby.
Yeah, interesting.
So that's one possibility. I could go back and just do finish work or say interior work on boats and yachts and electronics and things like that on boats. Or I could move down south and just do charter fishing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
So I do that a little bit up here where I am in Northeast and the North Shore of Massachusetts. So just some chartering here and there for friends.
You could winter down south and keep that going too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is
longer
fishing
season.
A big, yeah. Is fishing a big reason why you do boating, or?
It's one of the reasons. I love fishing, and my family and I, we love going to the beach too. So take our boat to the beach and hang out and see our boating friends and go away on trips. And
it is a real commitment, right? Like once you decide that boating is your thing, like all mm-hmm. of your leisure activities are like, well, let's boat and eat and boat and whatever, you know, this is like an association thing, tangential association to it.
No, it's a huge community. Like we walk down on our dock where we have our boat and everybody's happy. I mean, nobody that goes down on their boat's like, oh, like, why am I even here? It's like, no, you're at your fucking boat. Have a good time.
Yeah. Even if you're fixing your boat, is it okay? Or
yes, I don't know. But you're allowed to swear as much as you want.
Yeah. The boating community accepts all language. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can tell when somebody's working on their boat because of the vulgarities coming out of the inside of it.
So is it powered boat, sailing boat? What kind of boats?
So a sailing boat's too slow for me and you can't fish off it very well. So it's a power boat.
Okay, yes. That's mm-hmm. true, actually. I lived in D.C. for a while and we had family friends in the Chesapeake, who had a home in the Chesapeake Bay, and they had like a fishing boat. You go out and you need the power to get through some of that too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, because we have our boat on a river and on the outgoing tide, we have some really strong currents and it can get very tricky. And if you're in a sailboat and you're not moving very fast.
Yeah, no, not at all. Mm. Turns out you're at the mercy of weather patterns.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You have a little trolling motor, but that's not gonna do much.
Yeah, it takes forever. I've only been on a sailboat a few times and it takes you so long to get out to the ocean that you're just like, I'm done by the time I get there. Like, let's just turn around.
Let's just turn around. We finished all the beers. Let's go back. I want to get a sandwich. You know, anyway. I don't know what accent that was. They just come out sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Turns out I have multiple personalities. I'll talk about that on a different episode, but...
So do you do any kind of like long distance trips on your boat or have you?
The farthest I've gone is probably about 100 miles, I guess.
Okay.
So we live North Shore where the Merrimack River comes out of Massachusetts. And I think the furthest we've traveled is down to Martha's Vineyard, down around the hook of Cape Cod.
And, that's cool. Oh, yeah. Kind of fun.
Yeah. Regularly go out to Provincetown, which is a tip of the curl of Massachusetts. It's about 60 miles, I guess. Hmm. Yeah.
See a lot I imagine of there's a lot of marinas and things to go to in that area.
There are, yeah. Just during the summer, though.
Yeah, right. That's a thing. In the winter, you'll need a different kind of boat. One that goes through. Or just different
one that goes on land.
Yeah, one that goes on land. One that is an airplane that takes you somewhere else where it's warmer.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's much warmer here, but I live in the desert, and so the boating culture is, mixed. There's some lakes up north, actually, but...
You know, and you're in Arizona?
I live in Phoenix.
Okay. So, speaking of Phoenix, how long have you been there?
5.5 years this time. I was there like 11 years before, almost like 12 years. Yeah, like 11 years. Why?
Were you there during the Phoenix Lights?
No, I'm guessing, because I'm not sure what you're referencing.
I was doing a data center install one time in Dallas. I forget what year it was. It was like mid-2000s. And I had met somebody there that was living in Phoenix, and she had seen the Phoenix Lights.
I don't even know what the Phoenix Lights are.
If you look it up, there's some people that saw all these lights over Phoenix in a pattern. They think it was some sort of a spacecraft.
Oh,
even
interesting.
Even the mayor, or I think it was a mayor, had seen it as well.
So... I'm going to give you a little context here. So I moved here in 2000 the first time, mid-2000s, let's say 2005 or something. I would have been very social and too drunk to care or think about those things.
Understood.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known. I don't know. I was in Scottsdale. There were a lot of lights and a lot of other things. I don't know.
Yeah, there were interesting, you know, people that worked in the data centers. They were interesting, but they had signs outside the data centers. Dallas said, you know, no sidearms allowed.
Right. Yes. Mm. Yes. That tracks. This is the Wild West. And so there's a bit of that around. There's a lot of lifted trucks and aggressive driving and some other things too. So, and the fact that sidearms can be carried, you're sort of like, cool, thanks. No, sorry, you cut me off. I'm just going to move on with that. Anyway, pluses and minuses, like anything else.
Right.
But it is very nice in the winter where temperatures are mid-70s. I moved from like the Cincinnati area the first time. And when I had my first Christmas here, I didn't feel bad at all because it was me and my t-shirt during the day. And I called back family and was like, yeah, I'm just sitting out getting a little sun. Oh, it's snowing. I'm sorry. There's ice on the road. What is ice again? I kind of forget. Pluses and minuses.
That's nice. Yeah. I used to love winters.
I just looked it up. It says the Phoenix lights were four skydivers with pyrotechnics on them.
Oh.
Is that what it said?
Interesting. They solved it. Yeah.
They solved it.
That's interesting.
That makes sense. I did skydive here, actually. Remember what year it was, but at least a decade ago.
So it was you.
Not longer. It was me, actually. It turns out I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the chaos I was going to cause. Yeah. I was just asked to go do this thing and hold a flare. Seemed fine to me. Listen, at the end, there was a bottle of whiskey in it. And we all know that'll get me to do a lot of things. Including this podcast, you know, like Robbie keeps sending me bottles of whiskey. I show up. We're good to go.
Perfect.
It's a mutually beneficial relationship. Whoa, pop.
Yeah, but you didn't hear that.
Yeah. So I saw that you made a homemade drink smoker. Is that still in play? How's that working out for you?
It is. I still have it. However, when one of my friends saw it, he bought me a real one.
Oh.
Like one that was, mine was a prototype, but it never made it past the prototype.
Right.
And so he ended up buying me a real one that came with a torch and everything. And they're quite nice when making old fashioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got gifted one a few years ago, actually. And yeah, it was, the torch is super nice. That's like that's half the battle right there is getting that like nice torch. But I was wondering like the homebrew version, if that was just as good or not actually pay.
It works just as well, you know. It's just if you want to take a little time to try to make one yourself, you can, but it's much easier to buy the whole kit. You get the torch, little thing, and
it works. But if you have the carpentry skills, you can. It's a little more renewable, too.
It is, yeah. And I've got a little shop set up in my basement to make whatever I want. So that helps.
Yeah, yeah, for your next career, too.
Yeah, you never know.
You don't.
You don't. Yeah. I mean, if we have a solar flare and it wipes everything out, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I think about that. Like, if there were no internet, do I actually want to still live? I don't know. Like,
I mean, I love technology and the internet. I mean,
there's
so much out there.
Yeah, I mean, if we were equalized as a civilization to where, like, no one had it, not just me, like, you punish me and take it away, well, that feels a particular way. But if, as a civilization, it were wiped out and we were all just like reset a little bit, I do think about that sometimes. That's interesting.
Yeah. So you've heard about the theory of like the simulation theory.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a huge solar flare and we were in a sim, would that affect it?
Hmm. I would think so.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Unless the flare was part of the simulation.
Oh, well. And there we go.
Yeah.
Right? So someone has to pull us out of the matrix at that point.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Or if the, you know, the software is good enough to not like to mask the effects, like who knows? Yeah.
Mm. One can only hope maybe or not. I don't know. That movie didn't. Yeah. That's not the reality I want to wake up to either. Yeah.
No.
I just want to read books again all the time. Choose your own adventure. I love those things as a kid. If I could go back where that was like entertainment for a kid, that'd be amazing. That's the stuff I would love to offer to my children. It's like, look books. At this was amazing. Yeah, books. They like books. They're okay with books, you know, but they have a lot.
You can make your own adventure website. Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, you and I will do that. Can you set me up with some DNS?
Oh, yeah. Hit me up.
All right. You never. Careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Because I do follow up.
Absolutely.
Okay, so. All right. We are about at time here. Is there anything that we missed that you'd like to mention or stuff you want to plug before we end?
No, I think we talked about most everything. I mean, I'll just mention Cloudflare DNS again. Domains, DNS, forwarding, certificates, a lot of things web.
All things web. The web doesn't exist without that because nobody wants to type and remember numbers. Let's just remember that.
No.
Yeah.
Numbers are hard. Names are easy.
Booyah.
Yeah. That's why they did it with streets.
That's true. There you go. Streets are the original DNS. You heard it here.
It's a good one, Robbie. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, it was clever.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you liked it, please subscribe, leave us some ratings and reviews. We appreciate it, and we will catch you next time.
Boom, 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 boom.